tell you something.
Chair calls the Education Finance Committee to order for Tuesday, March 18th, 2025. There is a quorum, and the committee legislative assistant will note the roll. Representative Bennett, have you had a chance to review the minutes for Thursday, March 13th, and would you move to approve the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move those minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Minutes are approved.
You didn't call for a vote.
Oh, sorry. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right.
Mr. Chair, I have a point of personal preference.
Go ahead.
With us today, I have an individual that started me off in my political endeavor. My mother's joining us today.
Aww.
And just walked in the door. And so I want to introduce my mother, Joanne Lawrence. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lawrence. And Joanna is your
name? Joanne.
Joanne. Thank you, Joanne, Ms. Lawrence, for your service in helping us bring Representative Lawrence to the committee today. So, Representative Mueller, if you want to make your way, our first bill on the agenda is House File 630. Representative, as you're getting settled in, Representative Mueller moves House File 630 before the committee with the chair's intent to lay over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. Representative Mueller, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. I feel a little bit like Groundhog's Day. I have been talking about substitute teachers since the moment I've been elected, and so it's really excited to be here. Wow, this is on today. be able to talk about this bill that hopefully we'll be able to get across the finish line. Back in 2020, when I was first elected during COVID, we were talking about the shortage of substitute teachers. And in Austin, where I live, is we had a human resource officer tell me how it would be most important for us to talk about expanding the pool for possible substitute teachers. Started working on language on that. In the following year, the following term, MDE kind of took the head on that and was able to pass some language to expand the pool for short call substitute teachers. To participate in the pilot program would for this expanded pool, you had to be able to pay your substitute teacher at least $200 a day. And that was very limiting for many of our rural school districts. And so I worked with MSBA and some of our rural school areas, worked with Pelsby to create create an amendment that would, if you look on your bill, 2.1 to 2.3, that this is the employee's regular rate of pay or 90% of the daily rate of pay for teachers with a bachelor's degree. Here we are. So, JK, that's not it. Why is my brain? It's right here. Oh, I'm looking at something else. I apologize, guys. I ran in from other places. From 2.15, either the same rate of pay or other short call substitute teachers in the school district or charter school or the employer's existing rate of pay, whichever is greater. So that's the bill as it is with the first endorsement. I was looking at something else. And I'm very excited to be able to have this as an amended, and then also included in this bill is that we remove the pilot. We just say this is now the new way that we hire subs. It's working. We're seeing it for the people who are able to participate in the pilot program. It's working. It's giving them more subs. I would like to note in your packet, there should be a letter from Pelsby that said that this is something that they have supported. The way that the bill is in the first engrossment, they are supporting this bill. And so all the kind of concerns of what this might be, we have worked with Pelsby and MSBA and other places enough to be able to talk about this well. So Mr. Chair, I do have some testifiers. I've rambled on long enough. And so if we could move on to our testifiers, please, Mr. Chair.
Members, we have a few testifiers on this bill. I would remind the testifiers to state your name and any organization you represent, and please keep your comments to about 2 minutes.
You're on Zoom.
All right, so our first testifier is Mr. Westrum. right. He is. I think he gets the award for the longest drive today, coming from Wadena Deer Creek. So. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Westrom. You may identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Bickberg and committee members for allowing me to testify. My name is Lee Westrom, and I am the superintendent for Wadena Deer Creek Schools in Wadena. I am testifying today to encourage passage of House File 630, extending the short call substitute teacher pilot program. I support the change that removed the $200 per day minimum requirement that was in the original bill. Wadena Deer Creek has not participated to this point because of the $200 per day requirement. We currently pay all of our substitute teachers $150 per day, and if this bill passes in its current form, we would definitely participate. While we're currently at $150 per day, I do anticipate that will go up to 160 to 165 next year. I've spoken with most of my superintendent colleagues in the Wadena area, and not one district participated in the short call substitute pilot because schools in our area pay from $140 to $170 per day for substitute teachers. Paying a para more to sub than a substitute with a regular teaching license simply doesn't make sense. Also, many school districts are making budget reductions, so increasing sub pay significantly isn't in the cards right now for most districts. My final thought is that if the short call substitute program is extended in the current form, as it is written here in the House Education Finance Committee, that many schools in rural Minnesota will participate. Thank you for your work on this bill and for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Westrom. Our next two testifiers will be via Zoom. The first one is Kristen Demmer, Assistant Superintendent of Business and Administration for Moorhead Schools.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Dr. Kristen Demmer. I am an Assistant Superintendent in Moorhead Area Public Schools. I'm speaking today on behalf of House File 630, advocating for the continuation of the short call sub requirements and the removal of the $200 daily requirement, which has been cost prohibitive for many districts. Moorhead is a rural district, and we sit on the border of Minnesota and North Dakota, which has some additional challenges to other school districts. We have a three-city metro of Fargo, West Fargo, and Moorhead, and we're actually quite large for a rural district. We're around 7,300. With 1,300 permanent employees, 46% of those are licensed teaching staff. In North Dakota, substitutes can be hired with the same qualifications as the current pilot substitute, short call substitute bill. So, of course, with the shortage of substitutes, the inequity between the two states creates further complication in an already urgent shortage of subs for our regional area, which also includes Dilworth, Barnesville, and Rothsay. And we're not unlike any other districts, both rural and metro, who've seen a significant substitute shortage in the last few years, exacerbated by our region's low unemployment rate, successful economic development, and increases in student enrollment, all really great problems to have, but has created a lower number of subs in our pool. To give you an example of what that looks like for us, our general substitute fill rate for the 24-25 school year is around 60 to 65%. With our lowest substitute in March, we had about a 50% fill rate on one day that left 30 classrooms open, about 56% in December, 26 classrooms open, and our best fill rate was in November, which was 78%, and that left just 8 jobs unfilled. And so for Moorhead, what happens when we don't fill classrooms? Students don't receive services or supports. We have to split classes among other classes. So you may split one kindergarten class among 5 other kindergarten classes. You may see doubling of classes with one teacher taking 2 classes, large group supervision, teachers miss contractual prep and lunch times. Administrators are in classrooms rather than helping other students or parents or supporting teachers in their classrooms. For Moorhead, we did not participate. Our basic rate is $150 per day. And there is some additional opportunity to make if you sub over a prep time and or if you sub so many days in a row, or if you're a long-term substitute in our district. So we would ask that this bill is considered not only to address the short call sub, but also for our district, some equity between us and our neighboring state. So thank you for your time today and the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Patrick Walsh, who will also be remote.
Good afternoon, Chair Bickberg. I don't have a whole lot to add to Lee and Kristen's testimony. I'll just say that in rural Minnesota, we have many of the same challenges that Moorhead or Wadena and Deer Creek have. And certainly we have to address the market no matter what the bill is going to state. So I would just ask you to support the bill as written.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Mr. Walsh, would you just identify yourself for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Patrick Walsh, Superintendent of Belgrade, Brutnell, Rosa.
Thank you very much. Thank you to all the testifiers. Members, is there any discussion? Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank Representative Mueller for working so hard on this bill. I know this is something I worked on a little bit during COVID, worried about who was going to show up back afterwards to do the subbing. And I know you've been very receptive to changes and suggestions. So thank you.
All right. Seeing no other comments or questions. Representative Mueller, any final comments?
Thank you, Chair Bakeberg, and thank you, committee members. It's nice to see that we're able to collaborate on this. This is a bipartisan bill in the House here, and I know that this is going to, if we're going to have an expanded pool, we have to be able to have our school districts be able to participate in it. I realize that some of the concerns that were brought up in education policy, we're already working on those, and I just, as a former substitute coordinator, and I hope I never have to do that again. That is a hard job. As a former substitute coordinator, I know how difficult it is for us to find substitutes, and this is going to really be able to help our schools out. So, members, thank you so much. And with that, Chair Bakeberg, I would renew my motion to lay the bill over.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. The chair lays over House File 630 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or for consideration at a later date. Sounds like Chair Joachim has a treat while we have Representative Clardy move this direction. So.
Thank you, Chair Bakeberg. I usually rely on Polly for all her stress baking because she bakes better than me, but I do have some espresso cardamom shortbread cookies. I'll stir it on this end.
Take a breath, Representative Clardy.
Thank you. I need one.
All right. As you get settled in, our next bill on the agenda is House File 1607. As Representative Clardy gets settled in at the testifiers table, Representative Clardy moves House File 1607 before the committee with the chair's intent to lay over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. Representative Clardy, please present your bill.
Thank you very much. I want to start out by saying that this bill is bipartisan, and the purpose of it is to create clarity and flexibility for Minnesota's education system by clearly defining what hours of instruction is in the secondary schools. The bill empowers districts to innovate by expanding what they can count as educational experiences, whether it's internships, service learning projects, or project-based learning. Importantly, this is not a mandate, but it's an opportunity for districts to explore into different areas. By focusing on the secondary schools, we hope to increase engagement and this is really loud. Increase engagement and to reduce some of the areas that we're trying to defend against, such as absenteeism. And I've spoken with Representative Keeler about this, and I also know that Representative Bakeberg, we're looking for like some other creative opportunities to get students more actively engaged in learning. And what's better than having students have a voice and choice than having the teacher being the sage on the stage. So with that being said, I do have some testifiers with us today.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. Members, we have a few testifiers on the bill. I would remind testifiers to state your name and your organization represented and try to keep your comments to 2 minutes. First up, we have Akilah Roberson, and then next up, we have Sherelle Edwards. So if both could go to the testifiers table, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am Dr. Akilah Roberson, Policy Director at Education Evolving, an organization that drives transformational student-centered designs for learning. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of House File 1607. Booker T. Washington once stated that success is not to be measured by the position that one has reached in life as by the obstacles which he has overcome while trying to succeed. This bill encompasses the necessary components to help our students acquire practical success in their educational and professional pursuits. Education Evolving was deeply involved in the formation and application of the Innovation Zone's work from 2012 to 2017. Innovators regularly identified instructional hours as an area where flexibility is needed to truly serve our young people, thereby creating rigorous, engaging, and real-world learning opportunities. HF 1607 addresses this need system-wide. The trailblazing leaders who created it sharpened the focus, flexibility in when learning occurs. There are many benefits to students learning outside of the traditional school setting. Practically speaking, students spend only 20% of their waking time annually in formal classroom education and the remaining 80% exploring learning interests in non-school settings. With the flexibility of instructional time, schools can maximize their engagement with students in any time, anywhere learning. In closing, this provides a platform for students to demonstrate knowledge, skills, and talents which might get missed in traditional academic settings. Thank you.
Thank you, and proceed with your testimony. Identify yourself and go ahead.
Good afternoon, committee. My name is Sherelle Edwards, and I'm a 17-year-old student that attends Exploration High School in North Minneapolis, where I was also born and raised. Growing up, I was raised in a home where academic excellence was highly valued, which allowed my enthusiasm for knowledge to grow as I got older. However, I went from being an honor student in elementary and middle school to almost failing ninth grade. My academic needs were not being met, and over time, I began to lose motivation and my love for learning. Frustrated with the lack of progress and seeking better education, I transferred to Exploration High School, a public charter school that emphasizes personalized learning tailored to the needs of individual students. In this environment, I had better relationships with my teachers and overall a better high school experience. I was introduced to numerous opportunities that led me to discover my gift for supporting and advocating for youth, as well as my deep passion for it. One of the experiences that shaped me was a fellowship with Uptake, a Minnesota-based nonprofit news organization. During my fellowship, I spent a lot of time at the Capitol, and I learned how laws and policies are made, as well as how to be a journalist and create unbiased reports on events. I also developed skills in research, storytelling, and advocacy. My fellowship provided learning opportunities beyond the classroom and often outside the school hours, yet I still earned civics credit. Another credit earning opportunity I had was a 7-day visit to historically black colleges and universities. During the trip, I explored rich history of the cities I visited and gained insight into the legacy of HBCUs. I also had the chance to visit the National Museum of African American History and Culture, where I engaged with stories and perspectives that are often absent from traditional classroom lessons. This experience was both eye-opening and impactful, and it took place outside of the regular school day and hours. These unique learning experiences reignited my passion for learning, and more Minnesota students need opportunities like these to stay motivated and engaged. I want to be an example of the positive impact House File 1607 can have on students like me. I believe this bill will encourage and empower districts and schools to adopt innovative strategies that address student needs and inspire their learning to equip them for the future. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Keith Blassingame and Julian Spencer. If you could both make your way to the testifiers table, that would be great. All right, Mr. Blassingame, you want to identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, members of the committee. My name is Keith Blassingame. I'd like to explain how House File 1607 would expand learning opportunities for students like me. I'm a senior at Volunteers of America High School in Northeast Minneapolis. I'm very interested in skills trades like plumbing, welding, mechanics. I'd also like to learn practical entrepreneurship and business skills. These areas are exciting and motivating to me. I wish I would have had the chance to learn them through supervised credit earning apprenticeships and internships. I've also done work and internships with Black Men Teach that I wish I would have earned credit for. The high school I attended until last month, Minneapolis Camden, offers career technical and engineering classes. The problem was I couldn't take them currently. CTE courses only count towards elective credits. For students like me who are behind on primary credits, taking CTE classes might have prevented us from graduating on time. Some students also want more hands-on real-world experiences. My friend Previon is enrolled in a respected community-based skills trades program called Urban Ventures that is held after school hours, but even Previon wasn't able to earn credits for academic credits towards graduation despite everything that he learned. Many students aren't very motivated by our high school experiences. Often we don't get the chance to learn skills that directly support our career goals. Take a look at attendance rates at Minneapolis Camden High School. Only 31% of all students attend school and 16% of African Americans 16% of African American students attend school consistently, according to the state of Minnesota. House File 1607 would give Minnesota high schools the flexibility to offer more relevant credit earning educational experiences, including those outside of the traditional school day. By broadening the definition of hours of instruction, this bill would help students access high quality supervised learning opportunities, such as apprenticeships, internships, and project-based learning. More motivated students mean more Minnesota young people staying in school and on track to reach our potential. I urge you to support House File 1607 to ensure students like me can gain hands-on experiences we need to succeed. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, chairs and members of the committee. My name is Julian Spencer, and I'm speaking on behalf of just being a concerned citizen. My name is Julian Spencer. I'm 21 and a proud graduate of North High School in Minneapolis. I help lead a new initiative called Good Trouble, where we support many young people in the Twin Cities who have struggled to find motivation and purpose in conventional schooling and who, like me, sometimes get into trouble outside of school. I'm here today because House File 1607 will remove a key barrier preventing schools from providing more motivating learning experiences. This bill will allow schools to count real-world learning like internships and apprenticeships as instructional time, keeping students engaged while maintaining academic integrity. I'm here because I was very unmotivated and disengaged in my middle school and high school years. Like a lot of other young people, I felt like schools weren't for me. To many young people in Minnesota are disengaged from school in part because the old classroom textbook model fails to meet their need for real purposeful work, skills, and experience they see as relevant to their future. I know firsthand how a lack of engaging learning options can push students away from school. As a sixth grader, I went from the classroom to the courtroom. I spent the next few years getting into trouble on the streets and in the justice system. Becoming a father at 16 sparked my desire to be a role model for my daughter and helped me find my purpose supporting other youth to avoid similar struggles. Many of my friends and classmates aren't that lucky. Right now, Minnesota's lack of a clear definition of instructional hours is a barrier preventing public schools from providing more flexible, real-world learning experiences that could keep students like me engaged and motivated. House File 1607 would clarify this definition, allowing schools to expand learning beyond the traditional classroom model while maintaining oversight and student protections. We know that when young people don't find purpose in school, they find it elsewhere. On the streets, in unhealthy online spaces, or disengaging from education altogether. We know that learning happens in many ways, not just through lectures or seat time. In places like North Minneapolis, young people are hungry for internships, apprenticeships, project-based learning, and other engaging learning experiences outside the classroom. House File 1607 would encourage districts and schools to use innovative ways of meeting student needs, motivate our learning, and prepare us for bright futures. Student disengagement is a crisis in Minnesota and across the country. The time to act is now, and House File 1607 is a major step forward. Thank you all for your time and support.
Thank you to the testifiers. Member, is there any discussion or questions? Representative Sensor Murrah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Clardy, for bringing this bill. I really support it as well. I'm glad to see that there's bipartisan support for this. I think everything that we heard from the testifiers is very, very true about young people want real-world experiences. They want time that's often outside the classroom, hands-on. I just had a comment about one of, I think it was Keith Blazingame said, you know, that talked about CTE and how he wanted to take a CTE course, but it would only fit for elective credits. I know that I think in the past, CTE and support for CTE is something that has been bipartisan. I think it's something that we all agree should be more embedded into our school day. But that just made me think that, you know, and I, especially because I know that some of the work that Minneapolis is doing around CTE, we have a really beautiful new CTE program and building in North Minneapolis that I would encourage everyone to check out. They're doing a lot of cool stuff there. But if it can only fit for elective courses and, it limits the students that can take it, you know, if students need to be catching up on credits for graduation, and I think just limits kind of how many students and what they can take it for. So I guess this is just a plug for, I think, more long-term work on this committee that I think we've talked about. You know, I think it'd be helpful to wholesale look at our graduation requirements and really, instead of kind of doing this piecemeal where we add bits and pieces here, really take a look at, like, collectively what are high school graduation requirements and how can some of the things like internships, CTE fit into that. So maybe an interim project for us, but I do think it's worth looking at. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensor Murrah. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the author. What I heard was that we need to give local options to the people that know the students' faces and know their hearts and help them to discover the seeds of what's possible. Too many students, they don't really know and they don't get the experience of what they could do. And when they get out of school, they might not be prepared. And I like the idea of these local options that allows them experiences so that seed's planted and grows and they have something to strive for and aim for. So I hope this bill and other bills allow us that local flexibility to be able to address the local students. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Clardy, for bringing this up. You know, we talk about what works best for our students, and I know firsthand that the many hours that I spent being educated outside of the classroom is what's influenced me to be in this space here today to try and construct and support our youth that are asking for this, whether it's in St. Paul, whether it's in West St. Paul, Red Lake. I mean, I'm so proud of those who gave testimony today. Mr. Spencer, I've seen the growth of how the opportunities have given you since you were in high school over in North Minneapolis, and now as an adult and guiding other, you know, not just about you, but about community. And if we can have that domino effect, I know we can. And these are the opportunities that keep our kids thriving. And it's not only just a job. It lays out a formation of mentorship. So I'm so great to hear that there is, you know, that there's bipartisan support on this. And I appreciate you continuing to champion these efforts on what outside work and inside work the classrooms delivers. Thank you.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Rep. Clardy. I know I can't see you right now, but there you are. I know this is something you've been working on for last term and this year as this term as well. And I'm just really glad that we were able to remove the barrier that we were seeing put up through through a lot of bureaucracy. And so this is something which is why I'm a co-author on the bill. I think it's really exciting. But I would also like to say that the bigger discussion piece represents Sensimer. An example of that is in Indiana, where they completely went and looked at what they have for high school education and high school diploma. And it's actually really amazing, and it's something that hopefully we'll be able to, like you said, look at in the interim so that we can figure it out. But for this bill, thank you, Representative Clardy. It's something that as teachers who are in the classroom every day, we know how we want to be able to be innovative and connecting to our students, and so being able to have that possibility by removing this bureaucratic barrier is really helpful. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Clardy. Thank you for all the work you're doing on this bill. I know there's still some I's to dot and T's to cross that you're working on as well, and look forward to seeing it move forward.
I would just echo the comments just to take a little chair's prerogative, I guess, in the testimony. So thank you to the testifiers. They did a fantastic job. And I think it was Mr. Blassingame that talked about 31% attendance rate. So as we're talking about kids being at school, and we talked about this in the last committee, but often what we'll talk about in some of the districts that I work in and with is we talk a lot about relationships in schools, and those are important. And that plays into the attendance piece. But we have to have rigorous curriculum, and it needs to be relevant to kids and relevant to the students. And we'll often have conversations and ask, well, what's the most important thing of those three R's? And people will say, well, of course, relationships are. But I think all of us could attest to, you know, we have relationships with people, but we're not really engaged in what they're talking about. Like, I can really appreciate something that my wife is talking, or I really appreciate my wife, but I may tune her out sometimes. Hopefully she's not watching right now. So, but it just plays into that relevance. And in our last committee stop, and hopefully I'm not taking your clothes, Chair Clardy, one of the testifiers said 1950 called and they want their school structure back. So I think we need to get back, and this is a good first step. So Representative Clardy, any final comments?
Thank you for your comments, committee. Also, I wanted to kind of reiterate what Chair Joachim was saying. We are continuing conversations with MDE and Ed Minnesota. The beauty of this is it actually creates definition, like a very clear definition for school districts. And like Representative Kwan was saying, it's, you know, it's something where the local can make decisions on it based on the rigor that Big Bird was talking about. So thank you, and thanks for your support.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. The chair lays over House File 1607 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. Our last bill on the agenda today is House File 1435. Chair Youakim, would you please take the gavel while I present my bill?
Okay, members, before us is House File 1435, Representative Bakeberg. This bill is being laid over. Would you like to begin your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Ben Bakeberg. I have the privilege to represent the communities of Prior Lake, Jordan, Shakopee, and the surrounding townships. The goal of House File 1435 is twofold and very simple. The first goal is to create a new chapter of law for education innovation programs, and it provides clarity to school districts about the current, and I stress that, the current innovation statutes already in law, but oftentimes are buried in old statutes or old session laws. And I'm going to just give you two examples: experiential and applied learning opportunities for students, and innovation zones. The second objective, or the second learning target, Representative Hill, see if you're paying attention over there, learning targets, is to put the planning and decision making in the hands of educators, school boards, and parents, and not the commissioner. Far too long, schools have struggled to adjust to the challenging educational environments, either because districts don't fully understand the flexibility they already have in current statute, or by a bureaucratic layer to a program that they want to develop. So House File 1435, just to be very clear, has no new spending and will not impact current programs like the PTEC grants. Rochester is doing an amazing job with their PTEC program. This bill does not impact the funding for that. It simply makes clear that programs that might have a state grant available are a local option if the district wants to try the program through another funding stream. It would be great if we had an allocation to support this, but first we should make these innovations clear options for districts at the local level while having that conversation about funding in the future. I look forward to continued conversations as we talk about this bill, and I want to just recognize Representative Clardy for the great work she's doing around our previous bill, and these you'll see have a lot in common. And what we're trying to do with this bill is just empower our local districts to be able to innovate at their local level while also educating them about what they can already do. So with that, I believe we have one testifier, and we can move towards testimony.
Yes, thank you, Representative Bakeberg. You have one testifier, Dr. Akila Roberson. Once you get settled, go ahead and just state your name for the record, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And we meet again. I am Dr. Akila Roberson, Policy Director at Education Evolving, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that promotes transformational student-centered designs for learning. Thank you for this opportunity to provide testimony in favor of House File 1435. Education Evolving is a staunch advocate for innovation zones and is proud of the transformations they have facilitated. Earlier in this hearing, I shared that we had the opportunity of leading a coalition of districts and organizations that advocated for the original innovation zone laws from 2012 to 2017. During this time, Minnesota's 2012 law established 4 zones, while the 2017 law established 6. Tri-District Community Education is an example of an innovation zone. This partnership is between the school districts of South St. Paul, Invergrove Heights, and West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Eagan. Through a network of businesses and community organizations, this collaboration fostered and supported opportunities for students, enhancing and deepening their learning experiences to stimulate and refine their career interest. In essence, it provided a platform for the cultivation of their many giftings and talents. Innovation zones contribute to the development of educational experiences that are more enriching for our students, causing them to excel holistically. In closing, I would like to leave you with the words of Malala Yousafzai for your consideration. Let us make our future now, and let us make our dreams tomorrow's reality. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Roberson. With that, members, is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify on this bill? Otherwise, Ms. Snyder, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Snyder, representing Education Minnesota. Appreciate the opportunity to jump up here extemporaneously. We have no major concerns with the bill. I do think that it could be, it could benefit from a technical amendment saying that staff cannot be required to work on a Saturday or outside of the typical workday just to be compliant with this section. The way things should work is that the statute and the collective bargaining agreement work together, and that would be sort of our interpretation of how the collective bargaining agreement is, that you can't be required to work on a Saturday without approval, without signing off on it. Nobody wants a teacher who doesn't want to be there. So we would consider this a technical amendment. I apologize, I have not spoken with Representative Bakeberg, but figured I would take advantage of the opportunity. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Caitlin Snyder. With that, members, we're going to open to questions from members. Representative Raybauer.
Oh. Wow. Thank you, Chair. Surprised I'm first. I never get to ask first in this committee because we always have so many great questions. Representative Bakeberg, I wanted to look at lines 3.8 to 3.15. I just want to make sure I'm understanding each of these parts. So it's a, you had said there's no money connected to it. Can you tell me a little bit more about this language that's here about a grant process?
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great question, Representative Raybauer. So that, if you look at the statute above on line 3.7, 124D.093 is references to PTEC. And that's the whole grant approval process for PTEC. And you see that we added in a line there that says when an appropriation is available. So currently within this bill, we're not allocating or advocating for a new appropriation. I wish we could, to be very honest, but that's just not our reality. So it would be when an appropriation is available, and then this committee would have to have that conversation.
Okay. Representative Raybauer, follow?
Yeah, so that part is where I get just a little bit concerned about if there is grant money available in that PTEC, if there isn't, because I believe we're taking out kind of the MDE oversight and it more being approved by a school board. So that does concern me a little bit if there does end up being grant funds that could be appropriated to this. And then second question is lines 7.26 to 7.29. It looks like here it says the commissioner, it took away the part where the commissioner may approve up to 3 innovation zones in the 7-county metro area and 3 in greater Minnesota. So would that relieve some of the issues that I saw from ed policy where some programs weren't getting approved? Was it because of the limitation on the number that could be approved?
Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, actually, after Ed Policy, I had a great conversation with Education Evolving, and they talked about that statute in particular and how that was intended to be changed initially years ago. So,
Okay.
Representative Raybar, one more follow-up?
Yeah, so my thought is on this, that we could consider putting back in some of the MDE oversight if we have those lines crossing out the limitations so that they'd be able to approve more programs, and maybe that would relieve the issue. And or I think the other thing I saw was other districts, you wanted other districts that had approved program, another district to go, oh my gosh, you have a great program, I want to do the same thing, to get automatic approval if it had already been approved for another district. Just thinking of ways that we could still have some oversight, but also still meet some of those needs that came up. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bakeberg, follow-up?
Yeah, I mean, I think the spirit of this is, the spirit of the bill as it's currently written, and I'm happy to have ongoing conversations, that's why the bill is being laid over, but the spirit of it is, if a local district wants to do something innovative, that local district has the flexibility to do that. And then, if they choose to do that, then they're taking on the financial responsibility to carry that out. And I shared an example in education policy that we did in our local district where I serve. We saw the problem with our parent-teacher conferences that, frankly, the model of doing conferences from 3:30 to 7:30 at night is archaic, especially when we have families that are working multiple shifts. So we had a conversation, and it was a collaborative process with our union where we talked about, okay, because we're part of this innovation zone, we did this thing called a flexible learning day. So and this was pre-COVID, and we have Chromebooks one-to-one for our students. So our teachers posted work online, so our students were at home. And then we had parent-teacher conferences from 7:30 in the morning till 3:30 or till 7:30 at night. So it addressed, it allowed for all of our families to have the opportunity to come. What we also did is took it a step further, and we scheduled conferences so that we were getting the families that we really wanted to connect with during that time. And we've had, you know, anywhere between 90% and 100% attendance at those conferences. We had our last scheduled one was on the snow day that we had, the last snowstorm that we had, and the, you know, the staff had flexibility on whether or not they came into the building. The cool thing is the majority of the staff came to the building, and then they just adjusted on the fly and did many of the conferences virtually. So I think that's the spirit, and that's what can happen when we empower our local schools to do what's best for their local community. And that's the spirit of the bill, but happy to talk about things.
Thank you. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bakeberg, for carrying this bill, and Representative Clardy, too. I'm not sure where she's sitting, but I know she's in here somewhere. But good bills, and I think they pair off quite well. And I appreciate, with both bills and Representative Bakeberg, yours is the focus right now, but the ground-up approach, because the experts are at the ground level. There are teachers, administrators, school board members, parents, all those people who know the local students the best, and are educators who have been well-educated and have so much experience. So I appreciate the ground-up approach of allowing this innovation to happen, and I think powerful things will happen as a result of this. I do have a question. So I had the opportunity to visit the Fairmont schools, which is not in my district, but kind of on the edge, a few years ago. And they operate an excellent welding class, but they hold it on Saturday mornings, actually, outside of the school day. And it's an advantage to do that for these students who are it allows all the students, from those who are taking extra classes to catch up to those who are advanced, to take advantage of that program. And it allows for other students from other school districts to take part as well. But their frustration was that they could operate it, but they couldn't get the funding. It just didn't qualify. So I'm wondering if this bill would open up for more flexibility. I know additional funding isn't allowed, but to allow them to tap into funding for that, or perhaps Representative Clardy's bill would do that. But do you have any comments on that, Representative Bakeberg?
Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we Representative Bennett brings up a great point of a local district innovating. And again, I would assume to Ms. Snyder's comments about a Saturday morning, I think that's a very innovative idea. You know, we can't generate more revenue out of this, but in conjunction with Representative Clardy's bill and how we meet the needs of our students and making our instruction relevant to kids, I think would be a powerful tool to frankly keep kids engaged in a rigorous curriculum, a relevant curriculum, in a program that they're really excited to be a part of. So I've seen that be successful in other areas as well, and honestly have heard the same frustrations from districts.
Representative Bennett, follow up?
Just a quick comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for that, and thank you for these bills that allow for innovation. I think this is powerful because the opportunity for just at schools and school boards to make these decisions locally really improves so much from innovation to engagement of parents and so on. You mentioned your conference, parent-teacher conference story. I'm excited about it. And as a state, I really believe we should allow for this freedom, for flexibility for schools to innovate and then hold them accountable for results. That's our job. That's the accountability that a state and MDE and so on that we should have. So thank you for this.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Bakeberg, for this bill. I did hear it in education policy as well, and we had some good discussion there. I'm always in support of looking at ways to be innovative in our school districts. We hear that from students and from district leadership and teachers, and so I'm in support of that. I've thought a lot about this bill since that meeting, and one of the things that keeps coming back to me is the measurement of effectiveness of a program. You know, when we do pilot programs now in districts, we look at a lot of the pre-work and that data, and I'm kind of hyper-focused on the student outcome piece of this. So can you tell me more about like the measurements for student outcomes and how those relate to the implementation of a program? And then how do we look at the effectiveness? And I think that's important because with this, it kind of pulls out that MDE oversight piece. So like, how do you envision that working in this bill?
Representative Bakeberg.
I love the question, Representative Green, and for the sake of time, maybe we have more conversations, but I think the way that I would see a measurement of effectiveness, that would be part of the process that the local district determines. So when we were, to go back to the example that I gave around parent-teacher conferences, we had honestly not great attendance. So we had data, you know, year after year of data, and you know, came from staff and stakeholders, like we need to do something different here. We haven't looked at how we do conferences for years. So we had that pre-data, and then we have really strong post data that it is working. And parents feel engaged, parents feel empowered. So I think that's one way that you can do it, but you know, there are other measures, and I don't, you know, education, we always want to say that we did this and this happened, but there's a lot of factors that play into it. But I think we can look at student attendance and the engagement from that standpoint. That's a measure we can look at. We can look at our academic performance as well. We should be looking at that as a measure of success for our programs. Because if kids are, and I'll go back to what I talked about, if kids are engaged in a rigorous, relevant curriculum with a staff member that they have a strong relationship with, the kid is going to be successful.
Representative Green, follow up.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Yeah, I would love to take this offline too and talk about it. I think my concern is that with the measurements, when we start to silo districts and doing different things, like, and I know there's, you know, in here that the MDE would have a website of all the programs that are going on, but I'm more looking at sharing that information, which is kind of why things go through MDE. So, but I would love to talk to you offline.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. A couple questions or concerns I guess I have is, we're already asking our teachers to do a lot and keep adding more and more things to their plate, and a lot of those teachers are working a significant amount of time outside their contract hours, going in early, staying late, volunteering for extracurricular things, doing work on the weekends, correcting papers all hours of the day. And from my perspective, and a lot of the conversations I've had with both our teachers and school administrators, school boards, schools would struggle to operate if teachers only worked to the hours that they're contracted and paid to work. And on the flip side of that, our districts can't afford to actually pay the workers and those teachers for those extra hours that they are working. So instead, we kind of quietly continue to rely on teachers to go above and beyond to continue to try and meet the needs of those students. So my question is, how can we guarantee that these changes won't continue to add to that workload, ultimately driving more teachers out of the profession, especially kind of honing in into how this will interact with the contracted workday that our teachers have, especially looking at the language on lines 5.11 through 5.13, where it talks about providing career and technical education programs after school, on weekends, during school breaks, including summers, through the learning year program under Minnesota statutes, section 124D.128. And then I guess I'll stop there and let you catch up.
Sounds good.
Representative Bakeberg.
Try to remember all your questions there, Representative Johnson.
I can.
Representative Johnson, sorry.
So the question is, how can we guarantee this won't just continue to be another burden we stack on top of our teachers?
Representative Bakeberg.
Well, Representative Johnson, I'll be honest, I wish that question was asked more often over the last few years when we're talking about mandates on schools. But I think when we look at this bill and the intent of this bill, again, is when kids are engaged in what they're doing, the teacher moves from kind of that sage on the stage, the one guiding things, to you're facilitating learning for kids. And when kids are engaged, and for those of us that are educators, that's the magic. And the burden that is placed on teachers, what I hear most often from teachers is a lack of respect of educators, not just teachers, but just educators in general. And I think this bill, what it does is it respects educators as professionals to do what you think is best at your local level. That, I mean, at a very basic level, that's what we should be doing, is empowering our educators. You know, right now we're going into a time of testing, and teachers feel pressure for that. But what teachers really want to do, what educators really want to do, is innovate for what's best for their local district. We have to move away from these one-size-fits-all approaches, and we have to equip our local educators to do what works best for them, because the needs of Prior Lake are very different than Pequot Lakes. You know, we look at what Minneapolis is doing with their CTE center. I mean, it's phenomenal, the work that they are doing there. And, you know, maybe Representative Spencer Murrow can correct me, but years ago, many districts, and Minneapolis included, moved away from CTE. And we're seeing a need for that, so we're shifting back to that. So I think if we empower educators, they're going to feel supported and, most importantly, respected.
Representative Johnson, follow up.
Thank you, Chair. It didn't quite answer, like, how are we going to protect the teachers? Because they are, I mean, we're seeing them leave the profession. They are getting burned out. You know, when I look at that contract day, I've had this conversation with my wife a number of times about teaching to the contract hours, and she, one of the many things she doesn't listen to me on. But as I dug into that language, especially weekends, evenings, some breaks, all those types of things. And when I read into that language, I went to that subsection 124D.128, and it says a district may contract with a licensed employee to provide services in a learning year program that are in addition to the services provided according to the master contract of employment for teachers or an equivalent contracted or licensed employee who are not teachers. These additional services and compensation, if any, for the services must not become part of the employee's continue continuing contract rights under sections 122A.40 and 41. So again, what I understand the concept and the CTE and engaging students and all that, but if there isn't funding tied to it, like you said, how do we make sure that this isn't just another layer of things on top of those contracted hours? Are you suggesting that teachers won't be teaching to those contracted hours during the day, and instead we'll have teachers that are teaching on these flexible parts?
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good question, Mr. Representative Johnson. So that provision you talked about is the learning year program for instruction, so that extended learning year. Nothing will happen in this bill that would violate the contract. That would be a grievance process that would be happened at the that would happen at the local level. So as a building principal, I can't assign someone to work on the weekends. I can't assign someone to take a class outside of their normal responsibilities. Now, I have the right of assignment within their duty day, but I can't assign someone something after their duty day. You're exactly right. Most educators do tons of work. My mom was a special ed teacher. I distinctly remember her sitting at the table writing IEPs hours into the night. We're going to talk about a bill in education policy about some paperwork reduction. So those are things that I would never want to burden teachers with, but it's ultimately decided at the local level. So the local board would work with the local bargaining unit to just navigate through these things and how do we do this? And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work at the local level. So.
Representative Johnson. Nope, okay. Thank you. Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bakeberg, for this bill. I'm really interested in innovation zones. I've had some conversations with Education Evolving, too, about this. I think I have a question maybe for you and also for MDE, if they are in the room. So I think one thing I'm trying to understand is kind of as currently defined by law, and if your bill is changing this, like, what is the scope of the innovation zone? So I'll just kind of give you an example. I interned at an innovation zone in Boston where the whole kind of school model was different than it was a democratic school. So decisions were made collectively by the teachers and staff, and that was things like staffing, how the budget was spent, the schedule for the school day. Lots of things were decided in a very different way than most district schools. So to me, that's like a very large innovation. What you talked about with your conferences seems to me like a small innovation that I would hope, and I don't know what our statutes are, if we have statutes in the book about conferences, but like I would hope that schools already are able to do that kind of innovation. To me, that seems smaller, whereas like a school that wants to completely reimagine how decision making is done seems large, and like we might need district or state approval. So I'm wondering if, I don't know if Adosh is behind me.
They're back.
If I could hear from you and also Adosh, like what is the kind of current scope of innovation zones and what they cover?
Please.
So I think,
go ahead, Representative Baker.
I think we had to seek approval because it was changing our instructional time because it was an asynchronous time. So we had to seek approval to do that, to use your words, that simple fix. So I'll let MDE answer the rest of it.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Megan Adiola, Legislative Policy Manager for the Department of Education. Representative Sensenmura, thank you for the question. I think specifically to the circumstance that Representative Bakeberg talked about, that is something that districts can choose to do now with the passage of the Online Instruction Act last year. So the reference you made to being before COVID, during COVID, obviously, we saw that online instruction is feasible and doable, and people wanted to have the option. So in 2023, when we did a repeal and replace of the Online Instruction Act, which did have some additional requirements around approval, we just made all Minnesota school districts online instruction providers already, so they don't have to seek additional approval to do something like having the kids do a school at home on the Chromebooks and having still staff at the school to be doing parent-teacher conferences or what have you, but that was never something that would have been part of the innovation zone. That was more along the lines of a flexible learning year, a flexible learning day process for that specific circumstance.
Thank you. Representative Sansomara.
So I think my question is then, can you give an example, or maybe Mr. or Representative Bakeford could as well, like what are innovation zone waivers that districts or schools are coming with? What kinds of things are people asking for? Is it about the partnerships? Is it about a different kind of school day? Is it about waiving graduation requirements? Like, can you give examples of what innovation zone does apply to?
Megan Ariola.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Sansomara. So I think the part of the confusion at the moment is just that in statute, when we were referring to innovation zones, there are this very specific pilot program that is, of course, the underlying statute that we're amending right now. So currently, folks aren't applying to things as innovation zone CTE, hour of instruction, flexible learning time, that sort of thing. And I think the part of what technical feedback we've provided and what our thoughts on it are is that these, we agree that these are things that school districts already can, there are a lot of things in here that school districts already can do, and we want to make sure that when we start talking about these from the lens of innovation, that all the requirements in statute for those programs don't get tossed by the wayside. So for example, career and technical education, there are a lot of different ways that school districts can access and partner with CTE providers and businesses and whom and the like of that, but for the purposes of MDE, that doesn't live in any sort of innovation like office. So this is a little bit of a just rethinking of what these models are when we talk about them at schools, and right now they kind of don't flow under the innovation zone. They run to a variety of different places that have different oversight requirements. And of course, I'm sure that Representative Bakeberg has some anecdotes and specific stories to tell.
Well, I think just
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think a lot of things schools can do already; they just don't know it. So that's when I introduced the bill. That was the first intent to just really educate and empower schools to be innovative, so that they can not have the mindset of, well, I have to go seek approval. There's a lot of things that can be done. So we create this new statute similar to what we did with the attendance, to just say, no, you can do this. But we often have conversations at the school district level of, well, you can do this. And they're like, I don't know, because educators by nature they want to follow the rules, and they want to know what the rule is. And this is the little box that we live in, and we have to stay there. So this, the first part of the statute is just empowering them to go and meet their local needs.
Yeah, I guess I'll just end with a comment. I mean, I like a lot of things about this bill. I like letting school districts or schools know about the innovation they can already do. I think I will just say I have a fear that this is a little bit of some of the kind of mandate delay that was in HF6 kind of in disguise. Like, I worry, you know, we talk a lot about mandates that I hear in this committee. Mandates is a bad thing all the time. I guess, you know, what I would say is mandates are laws. We make laws all the time here. That is literally what we do. And so, you know, a lot of our mandates are protecting kids. You know, so for example, one line that concerns me a little bit is 5.20 to 5.22, you know, talking about school districts and implement models that provide student support or interventions to reduce the need for special education services, to reduce teacher time devoted to required special education documentation. You know, so I'm wondering, like, could school districts use this as a way to circumvent special education laws, right? Federal requirement or state requirements about what students and what kind of access students should get for those services. You know, I'm comparing it to, I see that Representative Clardy in her bill, you know, had a provision, nothing in the subdivision allows a district to deny a student access to any service or instruction required under state or federal law, including special education services. So just that's a little bit of discomfort I have, you know, I think particularly around something like special education and how that would interact, those mandates or statutes would interact with this law. Thank you.
Representative Bakeberg.
And I think this is the power of committee work, because I've read that piece, you know, a number of times, and my notes say there on 5.21, that's the MTSS process. So in my school lens, I'm like, oh, that's, they're just talking about different types of interventions within the MTSS process. That's easy. We should be able to constantly be getting creative, and the lens that I look at it is we have a weekly meeting where we're sitting down and talking about our students that are struggling and what are the layers of support that we need to be putting in place to support those kids. And then the next line says to reduce teacher time devoted to required special ed documentation. And we're going to talk about that in the next committee. But then I also have the number one complaint about from special ed teachers. And one of the main reasons I hear from special ed teachers that they're leaving special education, paperwork. That's the number one thing that I hear. They love working with kids. They love being able to see that light bulb go off with those kids, but they don't like paperwork. And so that's the, and I've read that statute a number of times, and I've never thought of it from that lens. So happy to chat and talk more about it.
Thank you. Representative Santamaria, okay? Representative Lee, and then Representative Hill. And then if anybody else wants to get on the list, let me know.
Great. Thank you, Chair. I guess my question was also to the author about what problem we're trying to fix here. But I did want to say, just because we ended on that piece, you know, I think it's not that special teachers don't like the paperwork, because sometimes you need that. It's that we're not paying them to fill out that paperwork that they have to do. Right. And so that's a discussion that we'll get into later, because we do need to file that paperwork. But I think just to the similar question that I had also is, you know, it seems like here we're there's a problem, and I understand, you know, we talk a lot about listening to teachers and being able to be flexible for school districts across the state, because one school district is very different from another, even if they're next to each other. But I'm curious, I mean, I know a lot of the, my colleagues have already talked about this, but, you know, I'm curious, are there situations where, actually, let me rephrase that. It seems like the examples that have been given today, you know, were able to be done under current law. And so I'm wondering what the author imagines, like, this bill could do further.
Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, I mean, I think to go back to something, Representative Lee, that you said about special ed teachers being paid, I think we have to be very careful what we say in this committee, because if someone is doing paperwork outside of their contract time, they should be paid for that. Like, if it's outside of that, and I've worked in multiple districts, and we recognize that special ed, especially the paperwork reduction, is a huge, huge burden for staff, because there's a lot of federal requirements, there's a lot of state requirements, and they have to do it right, and they have to do it well. But when we make these, you know, statements that you know, people aren't being paid, that's just not been my experience. So every district that I've been in, if a teacher has a paperwork day approved through the special ed director or through me as a principal, we're paying them for it, or we're getting a sub so they can do it during the school day. So I'm sensitive when we say things in this committee that conflict with my professional experience. So CTE is a prime example. So a specific example, there are many districts that are wanting to innovate, and it's a Saturday morning, and there are limits to what they can do, and there are a number of districts that have reached out and been said that they're not able to do that because it's not approved. We want to do this this innovative program, and it hasn't been approved by the department. Their district is on board, the board is on board, the teachers are all on board, because you have to understand that a lot of these districts, use my building for example, our CTE lab, we share it with our high school. So you can't have a large number of kids in a wood shop at the same time. You can't have eighth graders in there, and you can't have seniors in there doing the same thing. So we run out of just capacity. So we're trying to do creative programs. And I can certainly get some specific districts that have shared it, but I've had a number of districts reach out and just say, you know, I really agree with this. We want to innovate at the local level, but you know, that's one example for you.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I would just say, I don't want to like belabor the point, but I mean, the author shared the story about his mom doing IEPs at the dinner table. Like, that's not something that we should expect our teachers to do, no matter, you know, what we pay them, right? So I just want to, you know, raise that point. But I think the piece about CTE, I mean, it's really important. I mean, just to Rep. Big Burke is absolutely correct. We have limits because we, if you've ever been in shop class before, you know, there has to be a maximum capacity because if you have too many people, it gets actually really dangerous. And so, you know, to me, like, I I've done innovation bills. I've been pushing computer science as a foundational thing across the state, and I think that's really important, and I appreciate the flexibility that we're trying to build here. But to completely take away oversight from MDE, which is there to keep students safe, to, you know, make sure that we protect teachers and the contracts that they sign, you know, seems like you're bringing in a solution that, you know, it doesn't fit the problem, and that's why I asked my question. And then my last question to the author is, I'm curious, you know, who, which groups you worked with to draft this bill.
Representative Baker.
So I've worked with multiple stakeholders from the different education groups, got feedback from them. I've worked with educators, with teachers. That's where this is coming from. And that's who I'm going to continue to listen to. I think the biggest problem with this place is we sometimes worry about people here in the dome, and we forget that every decision that's made at this table has an impact on our teachers, on our educators, and most importantly, on our kids.
Can I go to the next person, Representative Sensenmayer? Do you have one more question, maybe?
Oh, roughly. Yeah. I'll close very quickly, and if there's someone after me. I appreciate that, and I know that you've spent a number of years in education, so really appreciate what you bring to the committee, Rep. Bakeberg. For me, you know, I was curious kind of, you know, where the genesis for this idea came from, and so, I know we've heard a lot of bills today about giving flexibility to programs to make sure that, you know, we meet students where they're at, but I did a really quick Google search and found that this is very similar to model legislation that ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, you know, puts out there to take away oversight from the Department of Education, which is really alarming. And I know that there are parts of this bill that I like. But again, this is why, you know, taking away oversight from MDE is really disconcerting, because I know some folks like ALEC, others don't. And that's because they push laws that weaken democracy and, you know, for lack of a better word, like, enrich corporate donors. And so I would just close with that. Thanks.
I don't know if I heard a question there, but Representative Bakeberg, feel free to make any comments.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have a choice. We can either continue down the path of micromanaging our schools, because that's how your schools feel. That's how I have felt in multiple districts. So you can look at it as taking away control from the Department of Ed, or you can look at it as empowering your local school districts for local control. It's just a perspective thing. I am always going to support our local districts to make the best decisions for their local needs.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. Representative Lee, Hill, sorry.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and thank you, Representative Bakeberg, for bringing the bill. Just to repeat a comment from our previous hearing, I've seen the power that they can come with innovation. And when you begin to match educators' passions with student interests, look out, because things can really lead to that deep learning that we are always aiming for. My concern revolves around access. That, you know, should a district make a decision to go down the path to innovate, that innovation and those opportunities would be available to all students is my concern. And you know, we may have a district that has a large geographic area, to making sure that students in all parts of that district have access. We may have enrichment activities that take place after hours, making sure that that's not only available to people who happen to own a car, for example. And so those are where my concerns lie. I see the benefit, but I also have that concern that I just want to offer to the conversation here today. Thank you.
Representative Bakeberg.
I think that's a great point, Representative Hill. we always have to think about how do we ensure that our students are able to access whatever we're talking about. One of the issues with the conferences that we talked about, or that I shared, was we started to realize, you know what, our special ed students were not getting the services that they needed to. Frankly, we didn't need the department to do that. One of our special ed teachers came and said, hey, Ben, I'm concerned about this. And we're like, oh, we missed that. So then we changed that to provide access for those people, for those students to come in and get their services met. And so it's a great point, Representative Hill. I think it's something we have to continually be focused on.
Representative Hill, any follow-up? Okay. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, this conversation's gone on a lot longer than I thought it was going to on this bill, but it's brought to the surface, I think, a tension that has been evident in a lot of our conversations in this committee, and that is, and Representative Hill, you nailed it, this impulse to ensure that every student everywhere in the state has access to the same stuff. There's a sense in which that makes sense. That's a noble goal, right? We want to make sure that students have universal access to the services that they need in order to succeed. It's not the current reality. I mean, we've talked about it in terms of the impact of the disparity in per pupil funding and the impact that has in districts like mine and Representative Qualms, where you have students whose potential is unmet because they don't have access to the same types of advanced opportunities that are available just 20 miles down the road. So provide the idea that through the imposition of oversight, we're going to secure this dream of students being able to have access to all the same stuff. As of today, the evidence is it doesn't work that way. So let's rely a little bit upon some innovation and flexibility to get districts the ability to potentially provide those opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Anybody else? You should learn, last bill, never good if there's time on the clock. We tend to fill a vacuum, right? Representative Baker, I'm going to take a chair's prerogative, too, and say thank you, and I hope you continue to work with folks. I know there is some concerns around here. Even with districts, I know I've visited Farmington and their competency-based education program, which they did a great job working with teachers and parents to help build that, because it's a different way to teach, and just like Lattice Math, it takes some parent educating. But they were doing a 0 hour before school on a credit-bearing course, which they weren't providing transportation for. So I think there's some concerns about like putting some bookends around that. So I hope we can continue the conversation. And I know the bill's being laid over, but want to give you a chance to do a closing, and then we can maybe get out of here early.
All right. Thank you, members. I think I don't want to be an alarmist, but the reality of it is, and we're going to be faced with some difficult decisions and conversations. And our schools are at a tipping point right now. The AMSD survey just came out, and it's not good, the number of districts that are cutting. So we have a choice. We have a very, very simple choice before us as a committee. We can continue down a path of the state dictating what is happening and having districts feel like they're handcuffed, or we can empower those closest to the classroom to make the decision. Put a little more faith in our local educators,
to do what is best for students. And I said it before and I will say it again. The needs of Prior Lake are very different than the needs of Pequot Lakes. Again, I look forward to working with Representative Clardy on her bill around seat time and instructional hours, since those expectations also factor into to what we're trying to accomplish with this bill. I hope we all agree that schools should be rigorous and relevant with high standards for our kids. But I think today just highlighted a difference of opinion. My opinion is that the local school board is going to work with the local teachers and local educators to do what's best. We've seen what happens when we mandate, and it's evident in one piece of data is from the AMSD survey. We have to get this right. We have to trust our local schools. Let's empower them to do what they think are best. Thank you, Madam Chair. And if you have questions or concerns, my door is always open. I am glad to talk. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think we'll just end here. We meet Thursday at regular time. We're going to do compensatory aid and unemployment insurance. That stuff's been posted. And to channel the Chair Kreisha, I think this was a good discussion, and we'll continue to have them. And we are laying House File 1435 over for our possible inclusion. With that, we're adjourned.